She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Today, we are not going to tell you what to think, I promise, but we are going to give you such great things to think about. I cannot wait for this show, and I don't care if I sound goofy. Thank you so much for joining us today. A big shout out to Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, who's sponsoring the show. They are great partners with Mrs. Green's World, and we appreciate their support. So here I am trying to take a deep breath and really get over the airwaves my excitement about today's show for many, many reasons. My guest today is none other than the Green Bronx Machine himself, Mr. Steve Ritz. And I wish I had all the bells and whistles of, you know, Clear Channel so I could do drum rolls and cymbal clanging and all that. But anyway, I don't. So just make believe I can ring the bell a little bit. My daughters and I, two of my daughters, got to be with Steve, actually spend hours with him touring some of the amazingly, truly transformative places that he has helped create in the South Bronx and the East Harlem. A couple of weeks ago, we went to the Big Apple. We love New York City, and we love it even more now that we know Steve Ritz and his wife, Lisette, and all the great people around him are there. So we agreed, the three of us, the Murphy Darling women, that our lives will never be the same. So Steve, get a hello in edgewise, and then I'll go in with my very long intro.
Had I known, I would have brought a little gong to give you a gong. Hello, everybody.
That's what I wanted. It was like some kind of gong, and I hope my voice is reflective.
Perfect. Welcome to New York City.
So everybody listening, do you think we had fun? Like, seriously, do you think we had fun? Which is always at the bottom of everything I want to do. So Steve is a Bronx original. And that means, for you listeners that are not part of the New York City talk, he was born and bred in the Bronx and is officially a public school administrator. And what I want to say to that is, ha, that's one of his jobs, one of his three, four, I don't know how many full-time jobs he has. But he's a thought leader, a game changer, an innovator, a creator, and the list goes on. So hold on, everybody. Let's get ready to explode some myths, be truly inspired by this man's journey, and hopefully change some of your lives who are listening, because he's changing the lives of some of the most at-risk populations in our country today, and I got to see it. So, Steve, did you get all that?
This guy. I can't wait to meet him.
Right. You'd really
Bring
like
him.
Him. You'd really like him. So, a shout-out to another great human being I got to meet in New York City. They're a sponsor of Mrs. Green's World Mission and Vision. I got to meet Sally Malanga, who is the owner, founder, CEO of EcoBella. And I have to say this, and I'm not saying it tongue-in-cheek. I mean, their company is about safe cosmetics and things that are good for your skin and beauty products. And I have to say this, I don't care. Her skin looks great. She walked in, I was like, holy smokes, she's a walking billboard for her own products. EcoBella has a crystal clear mission, and after meeting Sally, I know why. They're all about creating hard-to-find, healthy skincare and beauty products that are good for people, good for animals, and good for the planet, and they are doing exactly that. From the way they source their ingredients to their packaging, I mean, they are the whole green enchilada, minimal waste. It's one company that embodies sustainability from its very core. It's a company you can trust. That really, really matters to me. I encourage you to check them out. Once you check them out and use their products, I think you'll use them forever. Take a call to action here, www.ecobella2c's.com, and remember that they are for the greater good. So now, Steve, between the two of us and our personalities, let's try to figure out how we can get you in an hour. It was my biggest challenge day.
An hour is a whole lot of time. You can change the world in an hour.
Not for what you're doing. So let's do just a quick snapshot of your background, because one of the things I noticed about you is you don't really talk about yourself. You talk about the mission and the vision and what you're doing. and you're not narcissistic. You don't make it all about you. We just hung on your every word. So people do want to know, like, your background, though. I think you have to tell us.
Well, I think it's more important, really, to focus on the what. And what I really am is the world's oldest sixth grader. So as I continue on this mission and continue along this journey, it needs to be fun, it needs to be engaged, and I need to wake up every day and want to do something. Otherwise, I'm going to become that pain in the neck kid in the classroom. So if it's engaging to me, if it's wow, if it's a wow, I can do this, and isn't this cool kind of moment, because sixth grade was that time in everybody's life where you were the biggest kids in the smallest school. It was before puberty, hopefully for most of you. It was before all those things that really complicated our lives. That's a great time to be in. I want to capture that excitement, that enthusiasm, that energy, and translate it into actionable goals that are going to drive student engagement and help save the planet.
And sometimes I forget, like, the big, huge picture of telling people right in the beginning of what you're doing, the mechanism, the main mechanism that you're using as the Green Bronx Machine organization is engaging kids in planting seeds and in growing gardens, in edible walls. That's part of what we're going to talk about. But let's start with what you do so well. Let's explode some of the myths. Here's one of them. People in those neighborhoods, the marginalized communities, they want cheaper food. They want to eat at McDonald's. They want Domino's. They don't want healthy food. Blow that one up for us.
Well, there's a couple of pieces to that. I think, so number one, everybody wants cheap food, but yet everybody wants to be paid a living wage. So you can't have it both ways. So, you know, when people always talk about this whole sustainability thing, I always laugh. People are always yelling at Starbucks, oh, we got to have the coffee. We got to have coffee. You know, worry about the cup. Yeah, I worry about the cup, but I also worry about the worker. I worry about the source.
Right.
And I think that while people do want cheaper food, particularly in neighborhoods where income is fixed or limited, people also want healthy food. And one does not preclude the other. Sadly, what happened is that there are communities, for better or for worse, by design or by default, and you know what, this kind of disease, if you will, is spreading all the way across America, is that communities are targeted by, you know, certain kinds of food. But cheap food is really so damn expensive, because you may only be paying 99 cents for the burger, but the planet's paying a whole lot for it, and cumulatively, society's paying a lot for it, because we are seeing some of the highest rates of obesity and coronary disease and all kinds of issues in our lifetime. This is the first generation that will not outlive their parents. Basically, that's what we're eating. So in a world that's troubled for food and has all kinds of food security issues, half the world is starving and the other half is eating themselves to death. And that, to me, is just unacceptable on all sides of the coin.
And when you talk about that not being cheap, I mean, there's the health care costs at the very end. And paint a picture for us about one of the things that it will happen for Mrs. Green's World, that we'll have a video feed so that while the show is on, people can be seeing some of your videos. We'll have all those things that we're going to Facebook and tweet about so they can get a sense for where you're doing it. But paint a picture for our listeners about the kinds of kids you're working with and the kinds of conditions they are overcoming just to get to school every single day. We're not talking mom and dad, get the lunchbox ready and here's a kiss, honey, and money for your bus. Talk about the kinds of kids that you're coming, who are just kids. At the end of the day, they're just kids.
Right. They are just kids. But to add some context to what I'm doing, and most importantly, where I'm doing it, I work in the poorest congressional district in America. I work in the South Bronx. Of the students that I serve, 100% are either special needs learners, English language learners, foster care, adjudicated youth, homeless. I think I hit all the sensitive spots. So literally, you know, my kids come to school. They come to school with many challenges and many burdens, social burdens that many other people wouldn't have for whatever reason, short of, you know, Native Americans. So those are some of the challenges. My kids have to go through metal detectors, and to me, that's egregious.
Even in kindergarten, you said, like 5 and 6 years old.
We have kids passing through metal detectors. In my school now, it's sixth grade and up, but we have other schools where kids pass through metal detectors. And to me, it's just such a poor message that we can't police ourselves and that kids have to do this. They have to get dressed, to get undressed, to take off their belt, to take off their shoes, to stand on lines, to go through basically like, you know, travel the TSA process just to come to school. You've got kids sometimes who are traveling 90 minutes from their wherever they were staying the night before or their homes to come to a public school, to come to a charter school, to have to get undressed all over again. And to me, I take great umbrage with that. I understand it, but to me, that's just part of the challenge. I mean, some of the challenges in my community are 60,000 diesel trucks per week in the community. The amount of strip clubs that kids walk past, the amount of homeless shelters that kids walk past, the amount of people living on the street that kids have to walk past, that is a tough message. But it also sends a very resilient message to people and to communities and to people that where we learn matters. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so thrilled to be involved with the U.S. Green Building Council as one of their national ed ambassadors, because where we learn matters. In every school, every child deserves a healthy, safe, nurturing environment, one that's inspirational, healthy, and aspirational. And, you know, we always talk about the who and the what, but when we start looking at buildings as communities for tools of engagement and tools of performance, we're going to see the game change, and that, to me, is exciting.
So how does, I mean, there's a myriad of things as an educator with your experience that you could have chosen. You could say, oh, let's start a reading seed program, or let's start a quote-unquote crime prevention program. But what you did was take the concept of putting a seed in the ground literally to help start changing the pattern. Why gardens? How did that come to you to help create the Green Bronx Machine? I love saying that.
Okay, well, say it again.
Green Bronx Machine.
While you're out there, like us on Facebook. My kids have like 8,000 people, so if you're listening, please just log on to Facebook and like Green Bronx Machine. My kids will write you back. But, you know, you give me way too much credit. I got there by accident. Honestly,
I don't believe that for a minute,
but you can live with that legend.
You
know, I'm an ex-athlete. I liked music. I liked business. But kids had legitimate questions. And their questions were, why are things growing here? Why are things growing there? And I realized that, you know, in this age of no child left behind, no child should be left inside. And nature, you know, attention deficit disorder, I believe, is closely related to nature deficit disorder. And when kids in marginalized community learn to nurture and they learn about nature, well, they learn to nurture and they learn about nature. And when they learn about nature, they learn about nurture. So it's a very recursive cycle of self-improvement that really ties in well, because for so many, they are so disconnected from their environment that this is a wonderful way to reengage themselves and to be productive, to feel that they matter and to take care of something and to bring it to fruition. So yeah, we're planting seeds. Seeds of hope and seeds of opportunity.
Yeah. Get their hands just in the dirt and all of that entire process that becomes transformational. But tell us about, I never asked you this in the hours I was with you, like the first garden you planted. Was it in the school that you're in now? Where was the first seed planted beginning? I need to know that.
Oh, you're going to laugh. The first garden I ever planted, I didn't even know I was planting. Someone sent me this box of bulbs, and I didn't even know what they were. Quite frankly, I thought they were onions, and I opened up this box, and they were like, okay, you put these things in, and I was like, I think they're onions, I don't know what they are. But they were kind of like the perfect projectile size. So I was like, uh-oh, this is a problem. So I took this box, and I hid it behind a radiator in a very old school, and I was working with some very challenged kids. I was a dean of students in a very troubled school. So I just didn't want these things being flung around the room. And literally, I put them behind the radiator and forgot about it. You know, a box, cardboard box, calm.
Forget about it, yes.
Forget about it. Get this thing out of sight. If I can't eat it and can't use it, just put it behind the box and hope that the radiator and hope no one gets hurt. Well, lo and behold, the steam, it was a bad radiator, number one. Number two, the steam from the radiator forced the bulbs, and at some point, someone threw something else behind at somebody, and it went behind the radiator, and someone went to retrieve it, and we had this box of blooming flowers. in the middle of my high school class. And it was kind of beautiful. It was kind of like a special moment, and there was no fight. We had flowers. We went back to retrieve a book and found a box of flowers. It was a beautiful thing. And, you know, the boys wanted to give them to girls for sex, and the girls wanted to give them to the parents and give them to each other. And therein lied a moment for me. Because we were all just fascinating. Where did they come from? What are these things? Well, the long and short of it is that year I think I planted 25,000 bulbs across New York City with that group of kids. And we started a program called the Green Teen Program. And I won the Golden Daffodil Award for New York City, I think, in 2005. And
so they were daffodils.
That was the birth, to commemorate the tragedy of 9/11. And that became, I think, the starting point for my green initiatives.
And you saw
it
happening.
So it was just about someone planting seeds. Yeah, all by accident.
You have to make sure you tell that story when you're on Oprah. And you already promised me a seat in the audience, okay? But when you are...
No, listen, if I'm on Oprah, you could be right up there with me on stage.
When you were on Oprah, I'm going to say, Steve, remember to tell them the story about the daffodils, because it's a great one to share with everybody about how things work. And I, of course, don't think anything happens accidentally. My mother used to call it accidentally on purpose. So, okay. The Green Bronx Machine gets started. You plant the daffodils. And then in the school you're in now, because we visited the school where you are the administrator, we visited the tower, we visited the public land trust, and we visited East Harlem. And I'd like to talk a little bit about each of them, because here I want to try to describe it. So we're driving in the car, and it's scary. I mean, it's really seedy, and it's sketchy, and there's lots of not so nice things to see, and buildings with windows blown out. And then you drive up and there's, what is it, PS 55, and Katie, Emily, and I, like, our jaws drop. It's like, holy smokes, this is a mecca in the middle of a food desert, ugly, really urban scene.
PS 55 is in the heart of Claremont Village, and it's in, I guess it's nestled gently in between four of the largest public housing projects in the Bronx. It's a tough place. I mean, it's a challenged community.
And it's pristine and beautiful and graffiti-free and showcase. I mean, so tell
you
want to go on that.
Is an absolute showcase and a credit to all that is possible in what I like to call, and our Bronx Borough President calls, the New Bronx.
The New Bronx. I love that. We should put that on Twitter.
New South Bronx. Yes, we are the New Bronx. Without a doubt, I have to send a shout-out to Principal Lou Torres and Miss Brown. God, there are so many people in there who are working so hard to really bring the community in, to push the walls of the school as far out into the community as possible, and to engage as many stakeholders as possible. And what you see is a beautifully functional A-rated school in the poorest congressional district in America, where kids are really achieving and coming to school daily and aspiring to things that they've never even imagined before. And that's totally cool.
And let's talk about that. Talk about how through planting seeds and tending gardens, attendance rates change, grades go up, school ratings go up. Tell us about, it's not just about, hi-ho, hi-ho, let's go plant some carrots.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not about hi-ho, hi-ho, let's go plant some carrots, because most kids don't even know what carrots are or where they come from. They think they come from aisle 9 in the supermarket or a plastic bag, you know, from the lunch lady, or, you know, they're these perfectly shaped things. But what it really does, and what we do, is we design experiences that are rooted in engagement, in curiosity, in nurture, in prediction. And, you know, to your point, I think every kid has a story. Every plant has a story. And we're validating lives. And the kids are learning to take care of lives. So, you know, I jokingly say in high school, I could tell the kids to be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. And they're never, you know, I have to talk louder than them. And they're never going to be quiet. I could tell the kids, be quiet. The plants are having sex. And you can hear a pin drop.
Because the kids are inherently curious,
you know. And like I always say, I love seeing kids pollinating plants instead of each other. But these are the kinds of hands-on experiences that really teach kids things and get them involved and get them engaged. The cool thing about plants is, guess what? Inherently, they tend to grow. So if you put a seed in the ground, it's going to grow, usually even by default. But I don't tell kids that.
And
the cool thing there, too, is that, you know, there's no poop to clean. There's nothing that floats at the top of the tank. There's nothing that eats its young. So plants are pretty low maintenance for the most part.
All right,
but
when you
take it to a whole new level, it's exciting. The kids feel that the plants need them, and to me, I need them. And when you do it indoors, that's even more important because, you know, in New York City, we're so challenged by the seasons, we're so challenged by the environment. I want kids coming to school, not in the summer, I want them coming to school for the 10 months that are most important. So when we get these plants indoors and kids want to come to school to take care of them,
there's a bumper music.
Is really great.
We've got to take a quick break. I told you this would fly. We're going to talk about chicken coops in the middle of East Harlem, Steve's role as an education ambassador for the USGBC. We'll be right back. Stay here with us.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona, big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected automotive magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year. Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I am honored, and I say that not lightly, to have with me the founder of the Green Bronx Machine, Mr. Steve Ritz. He is also a national education ambassador with the United States Green Building Council, a public school administrator, and he is changing the world and thousands of lives through the simple act of planting seeds. Steve, again, it's okay for me to have you as one of my heroes. There's nothing you can do about it, so get over it, forget about it, and I'm so happy that our lives connected. And if I may, I'd like to start with some quotes from two of my daughters. I have three. My daughter, Rachel, who is green from the inside out and has my two grandkids, couldn't be here. But Katie and Emily were so blessed to have this trip to New York together. And I asked them for some quotes about their takeaways from their visit with you. And I think you, Steve Ritz, it'll touch your heart because these were things from your mouth. You did say think outside the box and explained that in many ways, literally. Create solutions where you see problems. We have to talk about this one. I refuse to accept the things I cannot change. I'm going to change the things I cannot accept. I mean, that is taking it on. Love that one. And here's one of the ones that they wrote back to me. If you teach kids about nature, you teach them about nurture. So there you go, from the mouths of a 25-year-old and a 32-year-old who came with me. So let's talk about why is the USGBC so interested in what you're doing, since it's not exactly building per se?
Well, first of all, the USGBC is about LEED certification. They're about building performance.
Right.
And so am I. So it's really ironic because, you know, people think I'm a farmer. But, you know, if you ever saw my TED Talk, I open up with a lot. I am not a farmer because I'm really not a farmer, you know, and while I do have a lot of outdoor space, is really the place that I farm people's minds. I'm farming in classrooms, and, you know, 30,000 pounds of vegetables later, in the South Bronx, I might add, my favorite crop is organically grown citizens, graduates, members of the middle class, kids who are voting, kids who are going to college, kids who are earning living wage. Beyond that, I like arugula. But, you know, really, it's about the next generation of kids. And what the U.S. Green Building Council realized is that where kids learn matter, that buildings themselves are tools for performance, and that if you have kids in environments that are inherently inspiring and aspirational, that's a game changer. It's a game changer, A, because kids want to come to school, because the environment facilitates better performance in school, and then you get better retention. You get better retention with faculty. I mean, I create beautiful spaces. We create beautiful spaces where people want to come to work. They want to come early and stay late. And isn't that great? And that's what the big push was for me to get indoors with farming, because quite frankly, you know, I don't like it too much outside. You know, I much prefer indoors. Sometimes you're the statue. Sometimes you're the pigeon when you're outside. And quite frankly, I just want to be the teacher.
Don't bring that up, because remember what happened to Emily. So don't bring that up.
Oh, that's right. There it is. So she met the pigeon, and she was the statue of Harlem, and she had good luck.
We kept telling her, it's really good luck, Em. It's really good luck. That was a Kodak moment that we did not capture. I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Right, but that to me is really what it's all about. So when people realize that buildings are also tools for performance, and that every child deserves a healthy, nurturing, safe, inspirational, and aspirational environment, that's going to be one of the greatest tools to driving performance. I mean, it's amazing, and it's funny. I was loving listening to your radio commercials, and you may not know this, but I graduated my master's degree from ASU. So
I did know that.
I know about it. Right. You know, I was listening. Great programs out there. Great. I mean, I love your commercials. Goodwill, who can't like them? And Bookman's, who can't love them? I mean, just wonderful, wonderful institutions. But when I met people from the U.S. Green Building Council, realized that, you know, I was working when I was going to ASU. I was working in some of the most affluent school districts and some of the poorest in the process. And, you know, you talked about what kids want in schools. Well, some kids come up with these real lofty, they want, like, solar panels and heated swimming pools. And then you go to some places, and kids just want bathrooms with doors on them, a water fountain, a basketball court. So when you have places that encourage kids to perform, that encourage kids that where they want to be there, that's ultimately going to help bridge the achievement gap. No one can learn when they're sitting there, you know, crossing their feet and crossing their legs, tapping because they're embarrassed to go to the bathroom because there are no stalls on the door, or the toilet paper rips off, you know, one square at a time because we have these institutional schools. So if people really want to see kids perform, maybe we should create environments where they'll perform at their best, and ultimately we all benefit from that. So I'm just thrilled, honored, and delighted to be a Green Apple Ambassador for the U.S. Green Building Council, because where we learn matters, and no one has found that out more than me. Listen, my kids don't need to be have a degree in sociology to figure out, you know, what kids get off the train at our stop and what kids stay on and go on to the Bronx High School of Science. They can look around that train and figure it out pretty well. And sadly, my kids, and kids in Arizona on the reservation, those are the kids who are the canaries in the coal mine.
Yep,
those are the kids who are on the cutting edge of all that is wrong with public education. But therein, you know, lies the greatest opportunity to change that. And imagine doing that by changing just the way we think about going to school, thinking about what we're doing in school, changing the way we eat in school, the way we grow plants, the way we interact with the environment. Ultimately, those are things that are going to go and transform communities. And that, to me, is what this is all about. It's the ABCDs, you know, asset-based, you know, community development model, which is what I really love. That's what I really aspire to.
And you, you know, I'm trying to paint the picture of our experience and recreate it, because it was so, so vibrant and so exhilarating and inspirational. So we went into the tower and, you know, open these doors, and you see this morass, I don't even know how to explain it, of living things being grown hydroponically. You see living walls. You see the principal after hours up on a ladder clipping things. And then the other guy that we met, who is a chef and is going to teach the kids how to cook what they eat, and you think, am I in a school or am I in like Nirvana? I mean, it's just, it's...
You damn Skippy, you're in school, and that's what school should be. But like, to give you some context and your listeners some context, and in case they want to look it up, that is the JVL, John V. Lindsay Wildcat Academy, in the South Bronx, located in the American Banknote Building. And four stories up in this 100-year-old former factory, we have one of the largest and most productive indoor farms in New York City, and next to a state-of-the-art culinary program, four stories up in a building, which is part and parcel of a second opportunity high school. So kids are coming to school to get their diploma and also get career technical training that they can go on to make living wage. Now, ironically, in the South Bronx, we are just, you know, what I like to say, five short minutes but six long degrees of separation from some of the most robust culinary markets in the world. So when you think about this, neither jail nor retail is living wage. You know, it's not a living wage. And when you look out and you see McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts and all these other things that are offering kids no opportunity, but, you know, literally a stone's throw away is the culinary epicenter of the world. If kids learn about fresh food and learn about how to prepare gourmet food, they themselves may have a gourmet experience in life rather than going up, you know, to the drive-thru. And to me, you know, it's rather remarkable that in these days, you know, the drive-thru is killing more kids in the South Bronx than the drive-by is. You know,
that's,
we're eating
like
ourselves to death.
I mean,
in
it's
South
so,
Bronx.
It's,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's pathetic. And this is the total whirling dervish brain on overload. Back to, you know, this is a great school. The principal's wonderful. I've already signed him up for my newsletter. I think he would be great for a show. But when we go back to PS 55, I have to go back there for a minute, because when you're talking about transformational communities, you had a harvest, got tons of really healthy food out of the ground, but then it transforms the community in what I call the ripple effect, engaging seniors, creating mentorships. And then there is that Zumba class that you showed us pictures of. Here's Steve Ritz doing Zumba in the middle of the South Bronx. And you really did stand out. So talk about what you get to see as Steve Ritz in terms of the transformational piece of this that starts literally with planting seeds. That inspired me.
Yeah. Well, we're planting seeds of hope and seeds of opportunity, and that's really what it's about. And we're also building relationships. We're building relationships with the police, because I got to tell you, the NYPD has been very supportive in terms of manpower and resources helping us build these gardens. And that's a critical piece, because realize, in the middle of the New York City housing project, you know, in this age of stop and frisk or post-stop and frisk, sometimes teaching kids that the police can be our friends is one of the best things you can do.
Yes.
And having kids meet police officers in the garden at that point of wonder is really an amazing thing. So we build relationships, and that's all I ever aspire to do. Yes, I love my vegetables, but I sure love healthy communities and healthy relationships. And that, to me, is perhaps the most critical thing. Now, sadly, for many of my kids, the bulk of whom come through the criminal justice system, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when they're going to have an encounter with the police. So if I make sure that the first police encounter they ever have is one in a garden, that's a good start, for
that's
sure.
That is transformational and a level playing field.
And I'm not into leveling scores, I'm into leveling fields, exactly.
Yes.
So that's another button you touched on. But what's really important to me to realize is that many of my kids are really being raised by grandma for a variety of reasons. That's probably a whole nother show. But if you feed grandma, wow, that's a game changer. You see, because many of my kids really aren't afraid of the police, but they are sure afraid of grandma.
That's what I was going to say. Don't mess with grandma.
Right. Grandma still swings a mean cane in the South Bronx, and grandma knows someone. Grandma has more people than H&R Block, let me tell you. So when grandma's eyes are on you, I have a possibility of working with you. I have a possibility of transforming your life. But when we give away food that's culturally relevant to grandma, man, oh, man, is that important, because grandma shows up at school. And when grandma shows up at school to get those veggies and you're bringing them back, well, guess what else grandma gets? Your homework packet. And, you know, we kind of we surround them with all the social services that they need to really become a healthier, happier, more engaged family. And, of course, when, you know, grandma just comes to school, that's a game changer, because I get her into class. You know, maybe we read together. I mean, I have big visions of doing intergenerational programming with kids and parents around the Internet, but also grandparents and kids around healthy eating. Because, you know, sure enough, Grandma didn't eat the way the kids are eating these days because Grandma didn't have access to the kind of fast food that we did. So we are really connecting people in ways that have what I like to call the multiplier effect. They're a transformational effect, and that to me is critical. And when you can do it all year round, that's great. And grandparents love to farm. And, you know, now in the Bronx, so many of my kids come from other places where hunger was at the forefront and the very epicenter of the reason why their parents came here. I have kids from Haiti, kids from Africa, kids from the Middle East. So when you tell people about growing food, Mr. Arias, I want to take this home to my country one day. I love that. Nothing thrills me more than that.
International
because,
seed planting.
The world. Yeah.
Right.
We
have
we're planting seeds all over the country, all over the world. It's beautiful.
And it's a perfect segue to what I call the public land trust. And I want to tell my version of it. So Steve takes us in his car to this area. We're on, you know, an excellent adventure. And we go down this road, the dead end street, and it's up against, it's at the end of where the train yard is. I don't know what the name of it is. It doesn't even matter. But there's like 800 trains that are, it's not a graveyard, but a train yard. And it literally, Steve says, we took back the streets. And what he means by that is they took them back and picked up all of the street that was there, took over fire hydrants that we can say on air because it's there for all the world to see, changed the neighborhood from one that was filled with graffiti, vandalism, littering, burned out buildings, and now it's high-end real estate. Am I exaggerating to say that it was because you started planting gardens? I'm not, right?
Well, I like to think there are a lot of forces. I'm never going to take credit for anything, or certainly everything. But I like to say that the forces are ripe for this, not only in that particular instance, but now across the country. Did I lose you?
No, but I love that you said they're ripe for this.
They are ripe for this across the country. So what we did do is we took a place that was really a tough area, make no doubt about it. It's at the end of a train yard. It's a depot yard, so the trains are clean, they're serviced, they're maintained. It's an active place in terms of the fact there are hundreds of men working in 8-hour shifts. Around the clock, 24 hours a day. Throw in, you know, the proximity of cheap liquor, no alternate side of the street parking. And for those of you who don't know what that is out there in Radio Land, it means you can park your car there endlessly and never get a ticket. throw in hot cheap motels a wrath of drugs and a whole lot of prostitution. It's the recipe for disaster and people living in cars and people committing local crimes related to substance abuse and property crimes to fuel their addictions. And while, you know, I don't believe in arresting people, I believe in arresting behavior. So we just found that by cleaning this place out and creating an aspirational, inspirational place where people could come and congregate and aggregate to do something good, it was a game changer for the community. So we went from 6 blocks of blight to 6 blocks of bliss, if you will. We are farming all year round up in the North Bronx. And most importantly, we have community gardens, we have children gardens, and we have a food for others area where 100% of the food that we grow is donated to local soup kitchens. Now, what's really interesting in this day and age is that in the old days, you know, soup kitchens were for the addicted or the alcoholics. It was men. Sadly, in my community, it's families. It's, you know, parents with 1, 2, 3 jobs. It's moms with kids. And also the fact that we are infusing these places with healthy, fresh food instead of canned food is critical. It's absolutely important because we're changing eating habits as well. And most importantly, the fact is that the food that we're giving is also used for culinary training inside these programs to teach people how to become, you know, gourmet chefs elsewhere with fresh food as opposed to, you know, just heat and serve. So there's a real triple bottom line. And then the other thing that's just really special to me is every plant that goes in the ground there starts in a classroom with a kid. So the kid gets to plant a seed, have a seedling, bring it out, and they get to come to school all year round and do the right thing in summer, all summer long, to come out and farm and participate in the harvest. And that, to me, connects kids. You know, the plants start off smaller than the kids, and by the end of the summer, they're bigger than the kids. And that's a wonder for them.
I know, and we participated in the harvest. And when I talked to you earlier today, I said, the show's going to fly. And you said, a whole hour, we're going to have to take another break, which I'm sorry we have to do. I love my commercials, too. You're the first person that ever said that. When we come back...
I like all your products. I like all your products, and they're bringing me back to my days in Arizona.
I love
while
it.
People are listening, please go like Green Bronx Machine on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
We'll
that's
be back.
How about you, Ms. Green?
This is just a break, so we'll be back with more from Steve Ritz, the Green, talking about the Green Bronx Machine. We have to talk about chicken coops in East Harlem, your vision for the future, and where this is all going to go to change our planet. Please stay here with me.
You got it.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Castle Rock Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at ChapmanTucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
You can save hundreds on home improvement by checking out Habitat for Humanity's Havistore. The Havistore sells new and gently used home improvement items for pennies on the dollar. You can find cabinets, doors, windows, light fixtures, furniture, and much more. Plus, our inventory is constantly changing. You'll be saving money, and all the profits go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson, helping to build a better community. The Havistore is located at 935 West Grant Road. You can reach us at 520-889-7200 or habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I'm so glad that you're a part of listening to this great show today. I am honored to have as my guest the Green Bronx Machine himself. I'm sorry, Steve, I have to call you that. Steve Ritz. He is a public school administrator. He is an educational ambassador for the U.S. Green Building Council, the USGBC, as we lovingly call it. And he never sleeps. I just had to throw that in. I asked him that. I said, Steve, do you sleep? And he goes, well, you know, kind of 2 or 3 hours. That's good for me. So nothing is sacred when you're talking to Mrs. Green. Sleep is overrated. I'm with you. I wake up at 3:30 and I start thinking about good questions to ask of people like you on the radio show. So there are people that will say, oh, this is great. It feels good. The kids are learning how to eat healthy. I like that. But there are other people that say, okay, so what good does it do them out in the real cold world? And you have evidence of what that does. Sustainable jobs, kids being hired for $40 an hour, putting in green roofs, maintaining green roofs. But then you have the East Harlem Project. Tell us how that works. How many people are employed? There really are chickens underneath the train. In the East Harlem.
And no chicken was ever hurt. None of my chickens were ever hurt making a nugget. I got to say that. But no nuggets were made out of those chickens. But, you know, there is some real... See, there's so much good data out there. So let's talk about that data a little before we talk about jobs. Because what we've done successfully is move kids from 40% attendance to 93% attendance. Cohort after cohort after cohort. So what happens when kids are coming to school 93% of the time as opposed to 40% of the time?
They're learning.
Oh, they're staying. They're learning. They're staying out of trouble. They're staying out of jail. They're not committing crime. They're not getting pregnant. They're not doing things that have tremendously, and they're staying, yeah, and, you know, they're not doing things that have tremendously high social costs. So they're doing the right thing. And then they're graduating. So 100% of my students graduate and go on to either college or a living wage job. And that is a game changer. That's a game changer in and of itself. Now, there's also other wonderful things. I myself have lost 120 pounds. I've got kids who've lost 50 pounds, 70 pounds. And those are things that, you know, sometimes we forget to measure. But these kids are going to have, you know, a much more robust, healthy life. They're going to be off medication. You know, I went from taking 80 milligrams of Lipitor to none. My insurance company should send me a big thank you note. They haven't yet. I'm still waiting.
A rebate. You should get a rebate.
Yeah, yeah, get a rebate. Maybe I'll just take them for therapy and go real
don't
deep.
Wait, don't wait for that check.
Yeah, I'm not waiting for that check. So there are those pieces. But and then littering is down. Vandalism is down. Crime is down. These are wonderful, wonderful things. Family engagement is up. But let's talk about jobs. So we have kids who are really doing amazing things, whether it's in the green roof industry, the green wall industry, whether it's in culinary. I have kids who are training the trainers, who are installing these programs and doing the work that I want to do. You know, my goal is to make sure my reach forever exceeds my grasp, and these graduates are helping to do that. They are making sure that teachers can teach, and instead of they are teaching for America instead of teaching for a while. They allow the kids to get in and turnkey the program while teachers lend their license and observe the kids and create active learning experiences. So it has been a game changer. Now more than ever, people want healthy, fresh food, particularly in communities of wealth and privilege. So when my kids can grow it and sell it and get top dollars, guess what?
We like
triple
that.
Bottom line, that is win, yes. Win, win. Yeah, we like that. We like that a whole lot. And now we're going to start moving into add-value products, salsa, marinara, hot sauces, seasonings, all kinds of things. And it's remarkable. It's remarkable. Now, you ask about Harlem. Well, we took an empty parking lot. We got 40 employees there in a community that had 39% unemployment at one point. That, to me, is a game changer. You know, from tax burdens to taxpayers, that's something that is inclusive for all of America, whether you are the 1% or the 99%. 100% of America benefits with this kind of model.
And you're talking about, you know, you talk from the Bronx, so you talk really fast, and I'm from Jersey, so I do too. But did everybody get that? 40 people are employed in this parking lot that there will be pictures of this up where there's chicken coops, there's composting, there's brick ovens. They have barbecues that the blocks go for miles. I wish I could have been there. So it is, would you say, from your experience, from your working both at the seed level and at the macro level, do you feel the paradigm shifting? Is this creating a paradigm shift? Talk about your vision for that.
Well, now more, I mean, listen, if you look at what's going on in some of our biggest cities, the time is so robust for us to really get back to our roots, so to speak. As a local agrarian society, you know, we need to feed ourselves. This country is hungry for food, so food sells and people need to eat. And we continue to lose arable land to, you know, and farmable land to suburban sprawl. But yet we have this vast appetite for really good food. So if we start growing our own good food in cities and using some of the technology, and realize the bulk of our food expenses come, I would love to say it's labor, but it's not labor. It's shipping.
It's transportation, exactly.
It's transportation. Yep. You know, our food has more frequent flyer miles than you and I will ever acquire.
Wish I had some of them.
Yeah, I wish, exactly. You know, my food is from all over the world. So if you can grow it local and reduce that shipping cost and also get it at peak of freshness and peak of nutritional value, oh, my God, that is win, 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 win. Now, abandoned cities, abandoned parking lots, all abandoned real estate present tremendous opportunities to grow food locally and grow it in communities where there was no opportunity, with those who traditionally have been less engaged, whether it's return to work, second opportunity, veterans, people who are just unemployed or formerly unemployable, now can grow their own future. you know, there's a big myth that if we give someone a resume and a nice suit, wow, they're going to, you know, it's going to be a game changer. It's not, because, you know, to be competitive in the world, you need to have five good outfits to go to work. You need to have a place to live. The nice thing about farming locally and doing urban farming is that you can live in a furnished room or go somewhere and still keep a job and actually have food to put on your table and actually have food that people want to eat and actually work your way from a room to an apartment to hopefully, you know, your next step in life. And that, to me, is what it's all about.
And the only thing that I, like, what happened to me in this whole piece of being in New York City for 10 days, I saw so much, I'm going to use this sincerely, seeds of hope. And I took lots of pictures. I'd be walking in the East Village or walking in Brooklyn or even in when we were with you, where little lots that I'm sure were abandoned lots are now beautiful havens, safe havens, places of hope. They're green, they're growing plants and beautiful flowers. So it is, you know, it really sounds so cliche, but they're springing up all over. And that to me is helpful for the paradigm shift that I know you and I both envision. Now, let's talk about before the show, and I'm rushing through the end. Let's really consciously say on Facebook, the Facebook name is Green Bronx Machine. It's not the, it's just Green Bronx Machine.
Green Bronx Machine. We're on Twitter. My name is Stephen Ritz, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-R-I-T-Z. I have a TED Talk. Please help us get to 1 million views. It's a rather remarkable story. And the funny thing is, it was before I actually started eating the food I was growing in school. So now I'm 120 pounds lighter than you'll see me in the TED Talk.
People put on the Facebook, is Steve okay? He's looking kind of skinny. I mean, people are noticing. And you look great. You look healthy and robust and full of energy. So, yeah.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to die active. I'm going to be active. I'm going to dig my own grave and bury myself.
No doubt in
my mind. I mean, that's how full of energy I have. You know, I'm going to come and pick my plants. And make sure that the rows look neat. But that's a whole other conversation. So yes, please like Green Bronx Machine on Facebook. I got to tell you, the kids maintain the page, and to me, that's the most important thing.
Because
when you have
awesome.
8,000 people
yep.
aggregating around something good as opposed to something bad, that is the force of positive change that we want to see. So the kids maintain the page; they'll write you back if you want to get in touch with me. You pester them enough, and then they pester me enough. It's kind of like the mommy factor. But no, you're not writing to Steve; you're writing to a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old, and they do a good job, so please encourage them. And
it's a great Facebook page to visit if you're feeling depressed, because the pictures are just, one word comes to mind for me is joy. And if you could, and people follow the Facebook page, but share it, because it's all in the sharing. So like it and share it and help grow this. Look at Steve's TED Talk. So the last couple of minutes that we have left, I'd like you to talk about, where do you see this? I know it's infinite. I know that you'll never stop. You are unstoppable, and I thank God for that. But where do you see the you going with this in the next like 3 to 5 years? How do we help the ripple effect really happen and create a change for our country and therefore the planet, which you're already doing? But I mean, in terms of the view from 60,000 feet, I know it's a long question, but you get where I'm going.
Right. Well, you know, I always believe that Green Bronx Machine, and we say it in our tagline, if you will, is coming to a city near you soon. And as we speak, it is. Listen, your city and all my listeners and all your listeners, they know a place in their community that's greener today than it was a year ago. So the greening of America, well, first and foremost, it starts with the pockets, because everyone needs cabbage in their pockets. You know, they need lettuce. You know, so it all starts with Hip National. And the return on investment, not only in terms of dollars, but social capital here is huge. So as we pointed out to you, you know, you can spend millions of dollars on intervention programs. You can spend a couple of $100 and do something really cool that makes sure you never need a project ever again and need intervention. That, to me, is what it's all about. So I believe this is our moment. You know, Superman isn't coming. You, me, I, us, we are the ones we're waiting for. And just like in World War II, when we grew half the produce we needed in our own front yard, we can do this today in our own backyard. And ironically, more of us are living in cities now than ever before. So America, let's do this. And what do we want? Well, we want more schools and less jails, more books and less guns, you know, more learning and less vice. more leisure and less greed. We want opportunities. We want opportunities to cultivate our better nature. And that's all rooted in everything that we're talking about here. Learning to nurture. Learning about nature. Learning that there's a season for everything. Learning that where your food comes from. And learning that input is directly related to output. You know, you can't put garbage in and expect to get, you know, wonderful things out. But if you put the right seeds in the ground and nurture them correctly, or the right seeds in someone's brain, you're going to reap a harvest of epic proportions. And that, to me, is what this is all about. You know, 50 years after Martin Luther King, and now you've got me evangelizing. I don't want to ever be a professional speaker. I want to be a professional doer. But 50 years after Martin Luther King, this country stands divided still, largely around race. And if you strand that out, it has to do with education and the environment. Really, so that's the big, you know, that's how this whole thing comes together with USGBC, the work that I'm doing, and really nature and nurture. But we can do this. And that, to me, is what's so exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you're so exciting. And I loved it when I said to you earlier, it's like we're willing to spend, I love alliteration, so money on prisons and punishment and only pennies on prevention. And to me, this is what I just had this aha moment, of which I had many, spending time with you and looking at your films and your commercials and the stuff that were for Progressive and Disney and all that. You never talk about the need for government to change a policy, change a legislation. This is about people power at the grassroots level, which is what gives me
Absolutely.
Hope. It's about people power. We can shift the paradigm. Don't wait for Congress to
I'm not waiting for anybody. I am not willing to accept the things I cannot change. I'm going
to
change the things I cannot accept.
That has
and
to
now
be your
more than ever, people need... This is, we are Americans, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, African Americans. Mama didn't raise a bunch of cans. So get up off your cans and can do something. Put a seed in the ground, and that it's just that simple, and watch it grow.
It's the single most important thing that people can do. It is to start.
But no, I'm not waiting on the government, and I have no issue with them either. But I don't need another blue ribbon commission or a 12-point management plan to tell me how to run schools. What I need is committed partners. And realize this: one out of four Americans goes to school every day. 50% of all households in America either have someone going to school or working in a school. 72% of all college-bound freshmen are making decisions based on green, sustainable choices. And 82% of Americans are more likely to do business with a company that supports public education. So what do we need? Committed partners. I don't need people to tell me the sky's in the limit. I want people who are willing to show kids that the sky is the limit and look to my students and their students and your neighbors and my neighbors as the next generation of environmental stewards and problem solvers. Because if we learn to solve problems together and collaboratively, guess what we'll do? We'll keep people out of prison, and we'll keep people employed, and people and companies and corporations will have businesses and customers for life. And isn't that what we really all want, a triple bottom line, a multiplier effect?
Yeah, and you know what I love is that you don't even, in anything that you've done, in anything I've watched, you don't even go about it as an approach to solve problems. You really don't. You go about it inherently, intrinsically, I don't know how, magically, of creating wonderful opportunities for change. It's like, oh, we got some problems here. We got to fix it. Let's plant a garden. Let's talk about kids that are watching the plants because you told them they're having sex, so then they're not. I mean, things like that. You've got kids watching. You've got kids engaged. You've got grandmas. You've got Zumba classes. You got it going on, dude. That's what I want to say.
It's
got it going on.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. But I will tell you this. I am, without a doubt, the luckiest man on the planet. To think that I can engage kids in school and in academics rooted in health, wellness, and nutrition, you know, teaching about ways to mitigate not only some of the greatest personal health crises of our time, but environmental crises, all tied to living wage jobs, to me, it's just the trifecta.
It is the trifecta.
So, I'm the lucky, it's the green trifecta, if you will. And really, these are the most pressing problems of our time. You know, we have gone from decades of lost opportunity perilously close to what I fear may become the decade of the last opportunity.
And let's
so
do it.
So it's really time that we wake up.
I know.
And do this.
Let's wake up.
And you know what? We can. We can grow ourselves into a whole new economy.
Si
and
se
here
puede.
In the new South Bronx, we are doing it.
The new Bronx. Okay, Steve, I love you, man. And I mean that. And I think you know it. I'm pretty transparent. Next week, Greg Walker, author of Smoking Them Out, The Theft of the Environment and How to Take It Back. Powerful book, powerful program. I hope you'll join us next Saturday at noon. Steve, thanks for showing up in my life. Thanks for showing up on the planet. Everybody, follow Mrs. Green on Facebook because you learn about great people like Steve Ritz. Make it a great green week. Bless everybody.
Thank you so much. Thank you kindly.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, bye-bye.